You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Guys, it's Adam. This is The Conversation. As always, I'm excited and honored that you are tuning in. Over the last few weeks, I've heard from more of you than any time since the start of this podcast. And whether it's a direct message, whether it's in person, whether it's an email, whenever anybody says, "Hey, Adam, I listened to your podcast," I'm speechless and blown away. And so I truly am so grateful for every last one of you. I just want to share one quick thing before we get into today's episode. And it came from a question that I got last week. Last week, a friend of mine just asked, he said, "Hey, Adam, how do you care for your soul?" And he was specifically asking as someone who has a compassionate heart. His wife is a caregiver. And so they're two people that other people go to oftentimes with their problems. Two people that other people often seek out, whether they're struggling or have a prayer request. And so I just want to share what I said back to his question for any of you who are that. If you're a caregiver, if you're a compassionate soul, if you're a pastor, you might be a banker, a teacher, a nurse, that people just know you're a safe place to go to. You're a compassionate person. And right now there's a whole lot of people who are hurting. And so if you do have a compassionate heart, this question is directed right to you. And so again, my friend's question was, "Hey, Adam, when so many people are going to you, how do you care for your soul?" And my response to him was this: you need to fight for it. You need to fight for emotional, spiritual, mental, physical health. Like, you need to fight for it, because it's never going to go away. People are always going to be hurting, and they're going to seek out other people in that time of hurting. That's a good thing that they're seeking that out. But as a caregiver, you need to care for your own soul. So I've said you need to fight for it. And then I shared a few specific things. I said time with God is so vitally important. Every single day, spending time with Jesus. And the busier you get, the more people who are coming to you, the more time you need for your soul with God. Spend daily time praying. Spend daily time in God's word. Spend daily time just sitting and listening to God. That's the first thing I said. The second thing, go see a counselor. You need to spend regular time in counseling. And I've shared a lot about counseling. And also, just to be candid, I haven't been to a counselor now probably in a year. And so I need to get back into that myself, not because I'm at a bad place, but actually because I'm at a good place. So I said, go see a counselor, spend time in counseling. And then I said friendship and the importance of friendship. Friendship is something, the older you get, it feels like the harder it is to find friends. When you get married, now you got to make sure that you click, well, all four of you get together, and then there's kids, and it just, friendship is hard. And yet, in order to stay healthy, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, all those things, friendship is so vitally important. So make time for the friends, the core friends in your life. And then I said the last thing is retreat. And right now, actually, as I share this, I am in the mountains of Colorado, and I am so grateful to be here. Every single year, there's a group of like 30 or 40 pastors that go either to the middle of nowhere in Colorado or the middle of nowhere in Montana. And for me, this is an absolute required thing that I go to. And I'm the one who requires it of myself, because I know that I need time away from everything, just connecting with other pastors and really caring for my soul. And so as I share this, I'm actually living this out. And maybe for you, that's going to a retreat with a few friends that are also bankers like you, or going for a gathering or whatever it might be for nurses. Whether it's five of you or 50 of you, I think the last thing I would add, and I didn't say this to my friend, but the importance of vacation and actually using your vacation days and spending time with your family. I used to see it as a badge of honor that I didn't use any of my vacation days. And now it's like, no, I need to take all of my vacation, even for the church that I work at, because if I'm not taking vacation, they're not getting the best version of me. Like, for their benefit, I need to use all of my vacation. So I just want to share all that. I hope something is helpful in something that I've just said there. But how do you care for your soul? You need to. It's vitally important, specifically if you're a person that other people go to. So that's what I wanted to share in today's episode. episode. This is going to be one of the most powerful conversations that I've had. I sat down with Mallory Wegeman. She is a Paralympian, and she is on the USA swim team. And her story is, it's heartbreaking, but it's also beautiful and powerful. She shares her story of being paralyzed and just the amazing things that have happened in her life since then. Actually, last week I got my issue of People magazine. My wife gets People magazine for free. I opened it up randomly and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a full spread of Mallory Wegeman. It's pretty cool just to even see her in People magazine right now. She's got a new book out. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, Mallory, so excited to have a chance to sit down with you. I want to welcome you to the podcast today. Truly honored.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah. And so I've been following you myself on Instagram, and we figured out we have some mutual friends, which is really, really cool. It's a small world. But if you want to hop into your story for the person who knows nothing about you, even kind of where you're from, your parents, just kind of ready, set, go. And I'll ask you a few questions along the way.
Yeah, perfect. I love it. So I am from Minnesota. I was raised in the Twin Cities, and my husband and I still live here. I'm the baby of three girls and two incredible parents who I feel so fortunate to have. And obviously now my husband of 4 years and our fur baby Sam live in the cities still as well. But for me, you know, a lot of my story, where the meat of it kind of took a change, was in 2008. I was 18 years old. I graduated high school in June of 2007. And on January 21st, 2008, I went into a health clinic to receive what was to be my third and final epidural injection for back pain, and I never walked out. I was left a paraplegic and left kind of figuring out what life in a wheelchair would look like for me and what that healing process was going to look like for me, not physically, but mentally and emotionally. And you know, I'm really fortunate. Like I said, I have two older sisters. And when I was a little kid, they swam competitively. And so I was constantly around the pool. And I naturally just decided, if they're swimming and I'm at a pool all the time, I might as well swim too. So when I was seven, I started competing. And that love for the sport of swimming in so many ways after my paralysis is what brought me back to life. When I found the water again and began kind of my journey to re-entering the pool and the sport in this new and different and in a lot of ways intriguing way, it was kind of that thing that brought me back to life. And so it's been a journey, to say the least, for sure. But you know, here we are 13 years post-paralysis, and last month we celebrated my anniversary, and I was surrounded with my husband, who I would have never met had this not happened. And so I do truly believe that everything happens for a reason in this lifetime.
Yeah, Mallory, I just appreciate you sharing just kind of the high points of your story. And it has to be kind of a before that event and after that event sort of thing. I think in different ways, some of us have very clear moments where there's kind of a before something tragic or before something wonderful, and really after that, kind of looking back at that specific time. For someone who's experienced maybe trauma of some kind, what would be your advice or just encouragement to that person who's maybe kind of in the moment of trauma right now, or maybe has a trauma that they haven't ever really dealt with, that really it's like kind of that before and after type thing where it's like, this is the shift of my life. Any words of wisdom to that person? It might not be as clear as what you walk through, and yet I think it's something so many people can really relate to.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. There's so much you can unpack from that just in, you know, we all have a story. every single one of us, and we're all navigating through circumstances and moments on any given day. And I think that first off, for those that find themselves in the midst of the trauma currently, you know, I've been asked a lot of times through this process the past few months of if I could go back and tell my 18-year-old self something, what would it be? And I relived so much of that journey when I wrote Limitless, and I found myself lost in the pages of journals and feeling what my 18-year-old self was feeling. And it's hard when you're in it to see that there's light. It's hard to know that there's something out there. It's hard to not get lost in that all-consuming fear and uncertainty and grief and maybe anger. But I think that knowing that not everything lasts forever, and that can be really freeing at times, especially when you're in the height of facing trauma, that you are strong enough to move through this. And it is not and shouldn't be your goal to move on from this, whatever this is, because this is going to be a part of you. It will not define you, but it will be a part of the fabric of who you are moving forward. And I would just encourage anyone in that moment to know that that fact of knowing that whatever this is for you in your life, allowing it to be a part of your life isn't a bad thing, because in so many ways, while those days were dark and they were long and they were terrifying, I am a better person because of them. And it has brought me into the light and allowed me to honor that journey and become stronger for it. And that's hard to see when you're in the moment. And it is not my expectation that anyone would see that with clarity when you're facing that. But I certainly do hope you can at least know that to be true and hold faith to that, because that is a big piece. And I think for anybody who's trying to let go of a past trauma, for everybody, that's different. And I think for me, what was really liberating was allowing myself to realize that healing isn't chronological. It's not a one and done game. Like, it is not, life kind of ebbs and flows. And here I am 13 years after that day. And there will still be days where that day circles back around and kind of hits me square in the face. And for a long time, I fought that because I thought it had to follow this timeline of like, well, it's been X amount of time since, so I should be moved on from that. And like I said, moving on, it's not, you can't do it. Like, it's not obtainable. You move forward, but you can't ever move on. I wake up to a wheelchair by my bed every day. It's a reminder. And I think allowing yourself to give yourself permission to feel what you need to feel in the moment, no matter how much time has passed, and, you know, just honor your journey. And I know that sounds so simple, but for me, those were some of the most powerful things I could do to let myself move forward into who I'm supposed to become.
Yeah, that's powerful to hear you share. You mentioned your anniversary of the event just recently. What does that day feel like just for yourself? Again, in hopes of really kind of connecting with somebody else that has those dates as well. I just saw a friend post that it was 2 years ago that she lost her dad really unexpectedly. And so for so many of us, we have that anniversary date of a miscarriage, of a loss, of finding out your spouse is having an affair. I mean, it can look so different. Is it something that you still do feel the pain like, in your soul from time to time, or is that something that has changed? Share that if you're willing.
Yeah. You know, it's a great question, and it's kind of a both thing. I call those, for me, I refer to the day I was injured as my sudden moment of impact. And that was kind of the day that everything I knew changed, and there was absolutely no forewarning that it was coming. And all of us have those, like you were just saying, and they can come in many different ways into our life, but we all have those moments that carry an anniversary, but also just on a random Tuesday, a familiar scent or sound or image can bring all of those emotions back. And, you know, for me on my anniversary, starting with the first year, my dad was with me when I was injured. He was in the room with me that day and I was wide awake. So I remember everything. And on the first year, I didn't know how I was going to feel. I kind of dreaded it coming. I didn't know if I just wanted to like skirt past it and not acknowledge it, if I was going to be sad. I was away from my entire family 3 weeks prior. I moved to North Carolina to go to school away from everyone I knew so I could kind of just figure life out. And I hadn't even been injured a year yet. And that morning I woke up in my dorm room in North Carolina in Boiling Springs, and I had a letter in my email inbox, and it was from my dad. And he wrote what he's now called kind of his open letter to me, shares it with the family, and some of it is shared, and some of them are shared in the book. And in that, he told me that on that day, he was going to choose to celebrate. And I just kind of sat back, and I remember sitting in my dorm room. And at that moment, I didn't know what I wanted the day to be. And I was really inspired by those words to the point of, Dad's right, we get to celebrate today because I made it to today and I'm going to make it to tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And despite how challenging it has been and how hard that sudden moment of impact was, every day after we've chose to live. And so we celebrate. And, you know, some years there's still kind of, I get in a little bit of a funk because I remember certain pieces. But in all honesty, the day that kind of seems to be more reflective in an emotional way for me versus a celebratory way tends to be on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We've only had one or two anniversaries in the past 13 years where the date of my injury and the Monday Martin Luther King Jr. Day align. And I think that's because it's just, I know it sounds silly and I'm not even going to remotely try to compare the journey that he walked and what I've gone through. But after my injury, I found a lot of empowerment from his journey and seeing his power to show grace and empathy and forgive and continue to chart forward despite what he had weathered. And I think that there's really something powerful there. And so I've always kind of clung on to that day as now when they don't align, I give myself that day as kind of my day to turn inward and just reflect. And then on the 21st of the month is the day that I surround myself with now my husband and my parents and loved ones, and we celebrate. And this year was interesting because I remember when I submitted my manuscript to my publisher, I was an emotional mess. I mean, I was just crying. It was like 13 years or at that point, I guess 12 and a half years of emotion surfacing. And for me, writing was really healing in a lot of ways. And it allowed this year's anniversary to allow myself to step back and feel like there was a meaning to it. Like January 21st, 2008 had meaning and purpose. And here I am all these years later, and I'm thankful for it. And that might sound twisted to some, but like, I am so beyond grateful that that day happened because I am who I am because of it. And I'm really proud of the person that I became and beyond humbled by the incredible people who have come into my life as a result. So yeah, everyone feels different on those days. There's no right or wrong. I think it's just letting yourself feel what you need to feel is the biggest thing.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. And this whole conversation we're kind of weaving in Mallory's newest book called Limitless. And I'll have a link in the show notes, go and get yourself a copy. I just have a couple of things before we actually I actually share about the writing process. At what point do you feel like your heart began to feel parts of thankfulness? Like how long did that come for you? Like, did it take for you to get to that place where I'm actually beginning to be grateful for this in some ways? And whether or not I could change it, that's whatever, but like, when did that come? And did you struggle two separate questions. Did you struggle with bitterness? Like, was bitterness something you struggled with of just that? And yeah, the kind of, that's a whole, yeah. I don't, that's like 16 questions in one. Yeah. So.
We'll start with the first one. Cause the second one, yes. And I think that's a powerful conversation in itself. But you know, finding my path to allowing myself to be thankful in ways, or to see the blessing in disguise, if you will, that lied within, was tough in a way, because I felt glimpses of it early on, like in the first, maybe even 6 months, because I felt myself noticing a perspective change. And it wasn't that I was thankful I was injured, but there were certain things I learned in those first 6 months of just being aware of the just simple things. I mean, I found a journal that talked about just, I wish I would have known it was going to be the last time I walked, because there's something so powerful about that feeling of being grounded in the balls of your feet when you stand. And like little things that were so heightened that I never thought twice about. And so I wouldn't call that, I don't know that I necessarily knew at the time. I was maybe starting to feel kind of some gratitude for that perspective shift that I had as a result of January 21st, because it's also really tough to feel happy after trauma, because you feel guilty. If you feel happy and joy and those things too soon, we feel that guilt of like, no, I should still be sad. I should still be grieving. And then it's like, but if we grieve too long, then we feel guilt of like, no, I should be happy because it's been this long since it happened. I need to move on.
Yeah. And
I think there was some of that where looking back, I felt glimpses of it. Glimpses, like quick, short glimpses when I was having those moments of perspective and appreciating the little things. But I don't know if I really, truly, like wholeheartedly, no questions asked, started feeling it. I had a glimpse in 2009, a year and a half after, where I just realized who I'd become in the process. And I knew that if I could, which I know you can't, if I could go back to that day, I knew I wouldn't change it just because of who it had built me into. And that was in August of 2009, I found that. And so that's what, a year and a half after. But I would say that now I'm at the point where, like, no questions asked. There's not even a doubt in my mind that I am beyond grateful for it. And that's a choice that I've made too, though. And I think that there's power in that. And I truly do believe that our moments and circumstances in life don't define us, but how we choose to react is what does. Yeah. And I've made that choice every single day. It's not always easy. Don't get me wrong. It is hard some days, but it is a choice that I have made. In terms of bitterness, I was 18. I walked in to a routine procedure and I didn't walk out. I don't think much else needs to be said for people to maybe draw their own conclusions on that one. There was a lot of anger I had for a long time about what happened in the four walls of that room. And it was really hard. I yearned for closure. I wanted answers. I wanted to know why. I wanted to know how. I wanted to know all the things that 13 years later, I still don't have answers for. And moving on when you don't have answers can be really challenging. But the truth of it is, most of us have to. Very, very, very few traumas in our life are we going to receive all the answers we want from that moment. And we have to find a way to create our own closure. And that's hard. That is so hard. And that is such an inward process. And for me, that closure came in choosing to forgive. I had to forgive everyone involved in my injury. And I had to let myself move forward. And so 4 years after my paralysis, as I was going into the London 2012 games, I realized, like, I've got to. I have to let go. And for my fourth anniversary, I wrote a journal around what I would say if given the opportunity. And I wrote about it and going to give a little bit of away, but I went into the administrative offices of the healthcare system I was injured in. And I read that letter and I wheeled out that day and I let that be my final piece. And I gave myself that closure. There weren't answers. There weren't explanations. But for me, it was reminding myself that I wasn't broken by that day and that I was strong enough to forgive what I for years thought was the unforgivable. And I let myself move on. And I think that that's, in order to move forward into who we're supposed to become, we have to find a way to kind of cut anchor from those things. And so, yeah, I was bitter. I was angry, but I ultimately realized that that didn't serve me any good in this life. And I had to find a way to move past that.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Faithful Counseling. I just got to ask, is there something currently interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? For many of us, that can be anxiety, depression, fear, or even broken relationships. But this is where Faithful Counseling comes in. Faithful Counseling is a worldwide counseling service that makes professional counseling accessible, affordable, and convenient so that anyone facing life's challenges can get help anytime, anywhere. Faithful Counseling offers four different ways to get connected to a licensed counselor. You can sit down for video calls, phone calls, live chat, or instant messaging. Every counselor at Faithful Counseling is licensed and has over 3,000 hours of experience. If you think Faithful Counseling is for you, you can sign up today and be matched with your counselor in 24 hours or less. Faithful Counseling can help us to live our healthiest lives in the comfort and safety of our homes. Be sure to check out Faithful Counseling at faithfulcounseling.com/theconversation. Again, that's faithfulcounseling.com/theconversation. Now, back to the show.
For myself, it was a few years back that I feel like I went through kind of my pivotal heartbreak so far in my life. And just the feelings of bitterness, it's something that can take over. And yet I think oftentimes God brings us almost to a fork in the road of, hey, do you want to continue on this path of bitterness? Or do you want to follow me and let me use it for good and bring you freedom? And because it's just the ugliest, bitterness is the ugliest thing that just takes over and spreads throughout our souls. I just never cease to amaze by how much bitterness can impact a person. You can see it in others. Oftentimes you can't see it as clearly in yourself. And yet I think from time to time, God kind of gives us those moments where we see that in us and it's like, oh my gosh, what do I do with this? And yet when the feelings are so heavy that it feels like you can't breathe, you know, and just there's so much rage. I've been blown away at times by the rage that can be inside of my own soul. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so dark. And yet to be honest with those feelings and, you know, really process them with God has been brings a lot of freedom. Mallory, why the book, let's really talk about that. Why do you feel like now, and maybe it was a very practical thing of like, well, I was approached about a book deal, but like, so it might not be anything like earth shaking, but, why now with the book and really what was your greatest hope for yourself personally, and maybe your greatest hope for anybody who picks up a copy?
Yeah. You know, for why now, it actually was a lot of my choice. I went down the process in 2013 after being approached and, you know, we kind of started exploring it. And I ultimately just realized I still hadn't answered all my questions and I wasn't in a place yet in my journey to culminate it into a book. It was too premature. And so I knew with that, it wasn't going to have the impact that I ultimately wanted it to have. And so we waited, and we just kind of patiently waited. And I truly did believe, and I still do, that we know when it's the right time for things. And you just know. I mean, I know that's so silly, but you just know. And so I remember in late spring of 2019, I'd been in contact with Tiffany, who's my co-writer, for years. We've known each other for, gosh, 7 years now, 8 years. And so I floated it to her. I was like, hey, I shot her a text. I said, I want to talk to you about the idea of maybe now being the time. And we hadn't texted in a few months. And it was so funny because she sent me a screenshot. She goes, I was literally, when your text came in, typing a text to you to check in and see how you were doing. And we're like, it's not like we texted every day at that point. It was crazy. It's like something inside both of us knew that, like, maybe now's the time. And so we started talking, and we went through the process of like, all right, let's connect with our literary agent. Let's see what she thinks. And we all felt like it was the time, and it was quick. I mean, we shopped it in November of 2019, and we started writing in January of 2020, and a manuscript was in their hands by June of 2020. Like,
that's crazy.
Fast once it started.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's insane. And so, but every step of the process felt right. And I think that was so telling of just knowing that it was the right time. I mean, I got the call from my literary agent saying that we had an offer in from the publisher that I was hoping we would get an offer from, who is ultimately now my publisher. And I was sitting in the shoe department at Nordstrom's at the Mall of America. And this is going to sound ridiculous, but that is like, I was sitting in almost the exact same spot I sat in 2008 in February when I was on a pass from the hospital and I was still in rehab and I needed to get a pair of shoes for PT. And I was with my dad, and I remember we went to the mall that day. I found the journal from after. I felt so lost and so alone and so isolated from this world, like nobody saw me. And I was sitting in that same spot in Nordstrom when I got my call from Cassie. And the funny thing is I normally never get cell service in Nordstrom. And so when the call came in, I was like shocked that she was calling me. I was shocked that I was actually having service. I answered it and I just started crying. I mean, people were looking around probably like, what? And it was clearly tears of joy. But so overwhelmed of like, what a God wink of all the places in the world I could be when I get this news that like, now's the time to tell this story. I was in the first place that I truly felt alone after my injury. And this was my chance to be, not only for me to be seen, but to share my story in a way that can help others be seen. And I think that for me is the root of limitless. I, for years, wanted to know why. What was the purpose behind January 21st, 2008? And I found with time that if I can use my voice to impact just one person, then that's enough. That's all it takes. If I can help one person navigate through their own journey or find light or find their own courage within, then that's worth it. And so limitless is that answer, and limitless is my why, and limitless is my way of sharing my story, not so other people know what Mallory Wegman's been through, but so people can sit back and honor their own and reflect on their own journey and find their courage within and their limitless potential. Because to me, it's not about like this cliche of, oh, I'm limitless. To me, limitless is a way of being. It's about knowing that we are more than the circumstances that we carry. And so it is, when I say my heart and soul is in those pages, ooh, my heart and soul is in those pages.
It becomes something that's holy. It's like, I feel like I put my soul into a book of some kind. Mallory, thank you for sharing that. One of the things that's been such a joy for me to hear, even as you've been talking, is you mentioned your dad. My dad's my hero, and I can't imagine there's gotta be a sense of comfort in him even being in that room that day. of just something the two of you have that like can never be replaced. And I just think about different people who have walked beside me through hard seasons, and you feel like you can't ever repay them. Maybe what's one or two things that either your father did or somebody else did that helped you walk through the last 13 years, not even just in the trauma itself, but what's been helpful, that again, either your father has done or said or whatever it is that's really been helpful for that process of healing that's taken 13 years.
Yeah. You know, you're spot on about having how fortunate to have him in the room that day. I told him this year at my anniversary, I said, I don't wish that on a parent. I actually cannot imagine having to be there as a parent and knowing there wasn't anything you could do. But at the same time, I am grateful because there's moments from within those four walls that I will never forget. And at least I know that I get to share that with somebody and I'm not alone in it. And so it is a blessing. And I really do think, you know, early on, I am so fortunate to have two incredible parents who would drop anything and everything and be there for me and my sisters in any time of need or celebration or any random day in between. Yeah. And, you know, as kids, my dad, we had a lot of traditions in our house, and I don't think we really realized, they probably did. But the two big things were we always sat down and had dinner as a family. Every single night, we ate dinner as a family. And my mom was a nurse, so if she was working a 12-hour shift, then we ate at 7:30 or 8 o'clock when she got home. Or if we had swim practice later, we ate early. And that was just our thing. And then mom and dad always both tucked us into bed. Mom and dad would come in together and tuck each one of us into bed. And like two teenager years, I'm not just saying like when we were like little tykes, like they did our entire childhood. And we'd say our bedtime prayers and dad would tell us, you're the best. You can make a difference and you can change the world. Every night as a kid, I heard those words from my dad. And every time I talk to him as an adult, I hear those words from my dad. And I think at the end of the day, after my injury, knowing that, yes, it started with my parents and my sisters, and then our community would grow bigger and a little bit bigger and bigger. And now I've had an incredible husband of 4 years, but knowing that I am surrounded by people that believe in me that much. And especially in those early days when I felt so lost, that's what it's about. It's about surrounding yourself with good people and people that bring out the best in you and that help you, like you said, walk through it. And I've been really fortunate. And even in my athletic career, it's like, I go to the pool every day and I have a coach at the end of my lane who for the past, since 2014, he's been coaching me, but he coached me before I was injured. He coached me as a high school swimmer. He was one of my first club coaches when I was 7. I've known Steve my whole life. And in 2014, when he came into my life again for the second time as my coach, I was coming out of an arm injury, which turned out to be permanent nerve damage. Like, I wasn't winning. I wasn't producing medals. I was a gold medalist from 2012, but I hadn't won anything in years. And I still haven't won a Paralympic medal, and we're in 2020. It's been 8 years since I've sat on that podium. And knowing when your community is around you, they're not around you for what you can produce, but for who you are. And that's what it comes down to. And I truly do think each one of those people has played such a huge role, from my parents to my sisters, to my husband, to my in-laws, to my coach, to his family. And all these people that have come in and constantly challenged me to bring out the best in myself. And I feel really fortunate for that. And, you know, I've done some really remarkable things, but I have not done it alone, not even close. And there's no way I moved through my paralysis alone. I mean, that's the power of community and the people that filled those sterile white hospital rooms with color after I was injured. that's how you get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a, I feel like I just have a group of people that I can't thank enough. I'm a big note person and I'm constantly sending the same people notes of like, I just want to thank you still. And so my hope and prayer for myself and even everyone listening is, first off, make sure to thank those people, before hard seasons come, or if you've walked through them after they've come. But also to be that type of person. Like I hope I'm the type of person who drags someone on a mat to Jesus when they can't get there themselves. Like I hope I'm the person who shows up when no one else shows up, who gets closer when maybe everyone else is getting further away. Cause I thank God for the people that I've had in my own life. Mallory, we could talk forever. We haven't even talked about your swimming. And so I want to encourage, everyone first off to go, buy this book, Limitless, The Power of Hope and Resilience to Overcome Circumstance. So go get the book. Also go find Mallory on Instagram. I'm following her myself. And I've been so encouraged since I've done that. And so, Mallory, again, just a huge honor for the time with you today. So excited about your book and the ways that God is going to use it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.